This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on October the 4th, 2006. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The Federal Election Commission open meeting for Wednesday, October 4th, 2006 will come to order. Our first item of business this morning, correction and approval of the minutes. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the consideration and approval of the minutes for September 14th, 2006 as set forth in Agenda Document 06-61.
Vice Chairman, so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries by a vote of 6-0. We have a couple of advisory opinions on our agenda this morning. First one is advisory opinion 2006-24 that was sought by the National Republican Senatorial Committee, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, and the Republican State Committee of Pennsylvania. And we have a late submitted docket. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider Agenda Document 06-63.
Vice Chairman, so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present. Correction approval of minutes we accomplished. Did we not?
Yes, we did.
Okay. So we have Ms. Pearl from the counsel's office on this advisory opinion. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. Agenda document 06-63 includes two alternative draft opinions in response to a request from the National Republican Senatorial Committee, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, and the Republican State Committee of Pennsylvania. The joint request asks about the application of the Act and Commission regulations to the establishment and administration of a recount fund by a state party or federal candidates to be used for recount or election contest expenses that might arise from the upcoming November 7, 2006 federal election. Both drafts reference the Commission's regulations at 11 CFR 100.91 and 100.151, which exempt money raised or spent from recount expenses from the definitions of contributions and expenditure, but bar the receipt or use of funds from corporations, labor organizations, national banks, or foreign nationals. Draft A concludes that the election recount expenses are in connection with a federal election and that a federal candidate's role in establishing and administering a recount fund is subject to 2 U.S.C. 441 IE, which prohibits any candidate for federal office or federal office holder from soliciting, raising, or spending any funds that are not subject to the amount limitations, prohibitions, and reporting requirements of the Act. Therefore, Draft A concludes that a recount fund must comply with the amount limitations and reporting requirements of the Act. Similarly, Draft A concludes that recount fund established by a state party to support a federal candidate's recount effort must be a federal account that complies with the amount limitations and reporting requirements of the Act. Draft B differs in that it concludes that because recounts are not elections under the Act and recount expenses are not in connection with a federal election, the restrictions of 2 U.S.C. 441 IE on federal candidates and the amount limitations of the Act do not apply. Therefore, Draft B concludes a federal candidate may raise and spend recount funds so long as the recount fund does not receive or use money from prohibited sources. Draft B also states that a state party recount fund may be a non-federal account with no federal reporting obligations. We have received 5 public comments on these draft opinions, including one from the requesters, and I would be happy to address any questions if the Commission so desires. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion of the issues before us with this advisory opinion. Well, this is going to be a very short and smooth meeting. Commissioner Weintraub.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll start. Yogi Berra would have loved this place because it's deja vu all over again at the FEC, particularly for Commissioner Mason and the chairman and myself. 2 years ago, we received an almost identical request, and we had similar drafts. The version of draft B was, I think, very similar to the draft B that's I don't remember which one was A and which one was B back then, but there was a draft that was very similar to the draft B that's on the table today. And there was also a version that was similar to draft A, but not quite the same, in that it held that not only would the recount funds have to be comprised of exclusively hard dollars, but that they would be aggregated with the money that was raised and spent in the general election campaign. And neither of those drafts had four votes back then. And I spent, I think, the day before the meeting scurrying around trying to come up with a compromise. One of the concerns that I think caused the predecessor to draft A to not have four votes was concern that it was unfair to the candidates, that it would put them in a very harsh position at the end of a hard-fought election when they probably would have spent all of their money. They would suddenly, on very short notice, have to come up with a whole new pot of money to fund the recount and would have to effectively create a new donor base to do so, because all their best donors would have already been tapped out if you were going to aggregate it with the same set of contribution limits. So I came in that morning prepared to propose that we give them a new set of contribution limits in the way that the current draft A does. And this draft A is very close to the compromise that I was going to suggest 2 years ago. And as of the night before, based on conversations with my colleagues, I was confident that I actually could, after everybody voted for their favorite positions as a compromise, I thought I could probably get four votes for that position 2 years ago. But that was 2 years ago. I still think it's a good and fair place to be. I think it's consistent with the law in that it insists that only hard money can be raised. I think 441IE's restrictions that state that federal candidates and office holders can only raise and spend hard money in connection with a federal election are really kind of hard to get around in this case. In order to get to draft B, you have to be willing to find that the recount is not in connection with a federal election. And personally, I just can't get there. I don't think that jives with the plain meaning of the words. I think if you went outside of the Beltway, outside of Washington, and asked any 10 people on the street who saw any of those pictures of those folks in Florida holding up the ballots to the light and trying to figure out whether the chads were dimpled or hanging or how many points were attached, and if you asked any 10 people on the street, was that recount effort in connection with a federal election, I think all 10 of them would say yes. I haven't personally gone out and polled anybody on this, but that's my belief, that most people would say it was in connection with a federal election. It's kind of hard to get to a reading, I think, that it's not in connection with a federal election. I think that's the plain meaning of the words. I think it's also probably consistent with congressional intent. It's hard for me to believe that the people who voted for BCRA thought that there would be a big problem with federal office holders going out and raising soft money up until Election Day. But if after Election Day the results were uncertain, they would be comfortable saying, okay, now you can go out and raise unlimited amounts of money. I just don't – it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and I doubt that's what they had in mind. The legislative history is a little bit oblique on this, but there is some – evidence in the legislative history. There's a transition section that talks about what the parties and candidates could do with soft money that was raised before the 2002 election, and what put into the law and discussed on the Senate floor was that they could continue to use that money for runoffs and recounts that arose out of the 2002 election. And if recounts were going to be not limited by BCRA otherwise, there would be no point in saying in these transition rules that you could continue to use soft money for recounts arising out of the 2002 election, because, in fact, you could have continued to use soft money for recounts arising out of the 2004 election, the 2006 election, the 2008 election, ad on infinitum. So I think there is a little bit of legislative history there that supports this reading. In addition, the recount regulation that the commission has on the books is premised on the assumption that recounts are in connection with a federal election, and that's what gave the commission the authority to put limits on recount funds such that one couldn't raise money from foreign nationals, corporations, or unions for recount funds. It's premised on that same notion of it being in connection with an election, with a federal election. And I think Draft B approaches that by saying, well, it's related to a federal election, but it's not in connection with a federal election. And I would be the first to admit that there are some fine distinctions that are drawn in both drafts, but I think that one is slicing the salami a little bit too thin for me. I just don't think it holds up. It doesn't hold together at that point to say that something can be related to a federal election but not in connection with a federal election. If I had more time this morning, I meant to go pull out a dictionary and look up the words connection and relation and see if there were any real distinctions in them. I'm, you know, just on my own knowledge of the English language, I don't see a lot there. To the extent that some people would like us to interpret our recount regulations that predated BCRA differently, I think the bottom line is that the statute trumps the regulation. And to the extent that any interpretation of our pre-existing regulations is inconsistent with the plain language of BCRA that says the federal candidates and office holders can't raise and spend soft money in connection with a federal election, I think the statute wins. And I think that the result of Draft A is therefore consistent with the law, and it's also fair to candidates because it gives them another set of contribution limits so they can go back to their best donors and get more money for the recount, but they are limited to the hard dollar amounts and the source restrictions. And I think that, as I thought 2 years ago, I think Draft A is a good result, and I intend to support it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. A couple thoughts from my perspective. We at this agency deal with a large number of very difficult issues under the statute, under our regulations. And it keeps us busy day and night on those issues. I have to say I don't think this is one of them. And the reason I say that is we have binding and plain regulations that could not be any clearer about the law regarding recount financing. Looking at our regulations at 100.91 and 100.151, it's a model of clarity and concision that we seldom achieve at this agency. But I think everyone agrees that looking at those regulations, they clearly state that corporate, union, foreign national contributions cannot be used to finance recount activities, but that personal contributions can. Regulations have been on the books for many years. They have not been subject to legal challenge, and they were lawfully issued. For me, that mandates how we need to proceed here. And I don't think it's even a close question. The thing that informs me more than anything else in this debate is the fact that the agency's approach to recounts has been longstanding, over 30 years in length, and obviously very well known to Congress, who, after all, no one is more involved in recount activities than the members themselves. In the debate on the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, there clearly were a lot of tough issues for Congress to consider. And that debate took place in the backdrop of the Florida recount. And yet there was no sustained, significant, or substantive debate that Congress at any level contemplated changing the rules regarding how federal recounts should be financed. And I just think it's implausible to believe that members would have been intending to do that without any significant discussion of that in either the House floor or the Senate floor. Equally important, this issue was raised very squarely before the Federal Election Commission in 2002. We had comments that were submitted to us urging the agency to modify its regulations concerning recounts. The Center for Responsive Politics submitted comments in 2002. They read in part, quote, Sections 100.91 and 100.151 would continue the exemptions for receipts or disbursements relating to recounts and election contests. It says, under the current rules, recounts and election contests serve as an avenue for the use of soft money to influence federal elections. The CRP goes on. We urge the Commission to end the use of excessive contributions for recounts and election contests by deleting these exemptions from the contribution and expenditure definitions. So the pitch was made, and the agency rejected it. The agency reenacted the exact regulations that had been on the books for many years, and they remain on the books today. And these regulations have never been subject to litigation and remain lawfully issued today. For me, that's very important, because unlike a lot of the issues that come before us, I think this issue is squarely addressed under the governing law. And when you combine that with the fact that there's no evidence that Congress intended to change the financing of recounts, I think it's dispositive, for me anyway. So it's a very important issue that we grapple with. I think Commissioner Weintraub rightly notes that we've been asked this question before, and it's important. We're you know, 5 weeks away from a national election, and I think that it's important for us to address our positions on this. But for me, the regulation is solid. It's lawfully issued. It remains on the books. It may not be how people might come out in a rulemaking setting. I freely acknowledge that. But it is how we came out in a rulemaking setting in 2002. And the issue was squarely addressed to this agency. So for me, that has very, very strong weight. And that fundamentally, activities that are in connection with an election have been described as activities that seek to influence voter choice. When you look at the Buckley decision and also the McConnell ruling, whenever the courts describe the in connection with language in the statute, that is the governing premise. It involves various activities to try to influence elections, influence voters on election day. And clearly recounts do not concern themselves with that because the voters have already voted and it's a legal proceeding after the fact. And in many ways, I think there are some parallels between what we're grappling with here today and what we grappled with in the advisory opinion that we issued in 2003 to Representative Majet involving an effort by the Congresswoman to have a legal defense fund. And what I think is significant about that is the legal defense fund at issue, or the litigation at issue in the Georgia decision, involved an effort by the Congresswoman to seek to enjoin the state of Georgia from holding a general election and also to seek a special primary and a special general election for that seat in Georgia in the House of Representatives. So clearly litigation that at some level relates to the election. Yet despite that, the Commission rejected the conclusion that Section 441IE limits the ability of these office holders, these members, to raise funds for these types of activities. And I just want to quote briefly from the opinion in 2003. It reads, the Commission concludes that 441IE1A does not change the result. There is no indication in the legislative history of BCRA that Congress intended Section 441IE1A to change an area that is both well familiar to members of Congress and subject of longstanding interpretation through statements of congressional policy and Commission advisory opinions. I think these same elements are in play here today. I think that we are fully entitled to stand on our regulations. I think it's appropriate for us to do so, and I hope that we are able to do so and provide guidance to members as the midterm election approaches. Other discussion? Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Mr. Chairman, I share that view, although before saying that, I want to thank the Office of General Counsel, Ms. Pearl, for doing a very good job getting us these two drafts. I know you did a lot of work to do that, and we appreciate all the time you spent on this. I mean, there's been some discussion here about the fact that, well, this is obviously in connection with an election for federal office. Well, the problem with that is the statute, Section 431, defines the word election. The term election means a general, special, primary, or runoff election, a convention or caucus of a political party which has authority to nominate a candidate, a primary election for the selection of delegates to a national nominating convention, a primary election held for the expression of a preference for the nomination of individuals for election to the office of president. The word recount is mentioned nowhere in this definition. Now, BCRA, when it was passed, amended huge parts of this statute. And they did not make any changes to this definition of election to include the word recounts. Now, as the chairman pointed out, our regulation is a very simple regulation, one paragraph. It's been enforced since 1977, and there have been countless recounts held in Congress. Congress is well aware of this. In 2002, when they were debating BCRA, we'd just gone through the biggest recount in American history. And if they wanted to overrule our view and our regulation, they would have done so. Now, the Supreme Court has held that when Congress is presumed to be aware of an agency's action, and when it reenacts a statute or amends a statute, and it does not explicitly overrule what the agency has done, then it's presumed to agree with the interpretation of the agency. And that is exactly the situation we have here. In 2004, before I came on to the FEC, I understand the agency actually sent an inquiry over to Congress to clarify whether or not Congress thought recounts should be included in FECA, and Congress did not clarify or make any changes. There is no record in the legislative debate indicating that Congress intended to overrule this agency's view, to overrule the regulation, and they certainly did not in any way explicitly amend any of the language in the statute to include recounts. Now, what Draft A attempts to do is to basically repeal or overrule a regulation, and we are by statute not allowed to do that. And I hate to keep reading statutes, but this is a statutory and a regulatory issue. 437FB states that any rule of law which is not stated in this act may be initially proposed by the commission only as a rule or regulation pursuant to procedures established here. In other words, we can't use an advisory opinion to repeal a regulation. Now, if you want to have a policy debate over whether this regulation is a good thing or not, then the way to do it is to open up a notice of proposed rulemaking in which we repeal this 30-year-old regulation. You can't do it in an advisory opinion. In fact, I would have to say that if we adopted Draft A, which attempts to do that, that would be an ultra-virus act of this agency. And any plaintiffs who were aggrieved by that would have a good cause for suing the agency. Now, I realize it's become the fashion these days for a lot of judges to ignore the letter of the law and to take actions where they issue rulings implementing their policy choices. I mean, we're not judges. We're not a court. But I think that that's what Draft A would ask us to do. It would ask us to ignore the statute and the regulations because there's some disagreement over whether this is a good policy choice. I disagree with that approach when the statute and the regulation is so clear, but let's talk about the policy issue for just a second. There were two comments made by someone who wrote into us that I think make a very good point about this. Donations to a recount fund aren't used to influence voters' decisions about whether to vote or who to vote for on Election Day. And so Draft B doesn't undermine in any way BCRA's intent of preventing unlimited contributions from affecting voters' election choices. At the same time, Draft B actually would advance a very important public policy goal, something that has now been discussed intently since the 2000 election and, in fact, led to the passage by Congress of the first major law affecting elections since Motor Voter in 1993, and that's the Help America Vote Act in 2002. The main reason behind the passage of HAVA was to assure the accurate tallying of votes. That's what recount funds are used, to ensure that every ballot cast by an eligible voter is counted. And so these kind of funds actually uphold the intent of Congress when they pass the Help America Vote Act, and they don't in any way undermine BCRA. For us to overrule a 30-year-old regulation through an advisory opinion 5 weeks out from an election, too, would just be unprecedented. I mean, we had discussions here yesterday in an internal hearing, and I think we all agreed on the particular issue we were discussing, that to make any kind of change 5 weeks out from an election was a bad idea. And we all agreed that the issue we were looking at we should review more closely and take a look at later, and certainly not before the election. But we would be engaging in the exact opposite behavior if we were to adopt draft A rather than draft B. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Von Spakovsky. Vice Chairman Lenhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For me, the question presented is, do the changes in BCRA have the effect of superseding our regulations on the recount? And specifically, whether BCRA's prohibition on federal candidates soliciting or receiving funds in connection with a federal election that are not subject to the limitations, prohibitions, and reporting requirements of the Act have the effect of overturning or overrunning the regulations we have on the recount. The language in BCRA in connection with a federal election is the same language that is used in FECA in prohibiting the contributions from foreign nationals, unions, and corporations. And it's different from that and has been interpreted more broadly than the language that's used in FECA to define what constitutes a contribution and expenditure. And this is relevant to me because our regulations on recount, which were drafted before the states that a recount is not a contribution or an expenditure, definitions which rely on the for the purpose of influencing a federal election language in the statute, and that the regulations and our recount regulation states that the recount is covered by the corporate union and foreign national ban on contributions provisions of the statute which rely on the in connection with a federal election language. And I think it's significant that in drafting the restrictions on federal candidates raising and spending money outside of the limitations, prohibitions, and reporting requirements of FECA, that Congress chose the broader language to accomplish their goal. As a consequence, I find that draft A is more consistent with the statute that we've been asked to enforce. Some of my colleagues have reached a different conclusion, and I can well understand that their reading of the law leads them to that conclusion. However, on balance, I think the draft A is more consistent with the statute, and I will support it for that reason.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Additional discussion? Commissioner Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate my colleague's legal arguments, though I'm a bit frightened by the suggestion in Commissioner Weintraub's argument that we ought to seek the opinion people on the street. It could be a threat to our jobs. All the expertise we've built up over the years. I want to address the policy question because I think a couple of my colleagues have acknowledged that the legal questions are live ones. The chairman doesn't think it's close, but it's certainly a live legal question anyway. Some of us think that it's a close question. And so in that circumstance, I think at least in part, we have and ought to look at the policy. And so one question would be, well, why do you need more than $2,000, $2,100 per contributor to fund a recount? And a couple of my colleagues have asked this question in our informal discussions. Or if you're relying on the state party funds, $10,000, that in essence on the premise that if you can't raise enough money to fund a recount that way, your contributors maybe are telling you something significant. And in part, I think that's a useful policy argument, but I think it runs into some difficult realities of the recount procedures. And we had the comment from the Washington State Party, and I want to join Commissioner Von Spakovsky's thanks to the staff, to Peg Pearl in particular, who apparently was up late last night and again early this morning researching state election law. But the case that was brought to us in Washington was effectively a requirement based on a per precinct deposit requirement in that state that a statewide recount would cost about $750,000. Of course, recount of all the precincts in a congressional district would cost less, but in that case they were worried about a gubernatorial election that is 2 years ago. and certainly the possibility that they would be worried about a senatorial election. And that payment has to be made 3 days after the votes are certified. And so a committee would be faced with a challenge of having to raise a very large amount of money in a very short period of time. And I think it's instructive what happened in Washington. First of all, I'd note that the Republican candidate won on based on the initial count of the vote. And he won based on the initial mandatory, they call it a recount, but I think most cases we'd call it a re-canvass or something like that in the state. So he won round one and round two, and but only by 54 votes. It's entirely understandable that the Democratic candidate and the Democratic Party would want to have a full and complete review. And, in fact, it ended up reversing the results. But they had to come up with $730,000, I believe, was the figure, in a very short period of time. And so what did they do? Well, they went to Senator Kerry, whose presidential campaign had $250,000 loose sitting around, which was a fortuitous circumstance. And I believe that that money was from his GLAC, which was why it was left over. He wasn't able to spend it on his own election. And they got $250,000 from the Democratic National Committee, and they raised the balance in part due to Internet solicitations from Move On, which is apparently capable of raising large amounts of money in a short period of time. Now, what that ends up doing is relying on that very fortuitous circumstance, and in a non-presidential election year in the next presidential cycle, I don't think a presidential candidate is going to be left with $250,000 sitting in some account waiting for a place to go. And I don't think policy-wise it's a particularly good result to force the state parties to rely on the national party to spend its hard money to go out and do these recounts. If I understand the statute in Pennsylvania, because one of the Pennsylvania parties is one of the requesters here, the deposit is $50 per machine or $100 per machine if they post a bond rather than a deposit. Now, I know there are thousands of machines in Pennsylvania. I'm not sure how many thousand. I know that 1,242 versions of a particular machine were certified for use in Pennsylvania in 1984. I know that some of the counties in Pennsylvania have up to 150 precincts. So we're certainly talking about thousands of machines and therefore hundreds of thousands of dollars in that state. So in other words, the point being that Washington is not unique in having a large deposit requirement. Now, abstract from BICRA and FECA, it might well be that a national party or wealthy donor would make a loan for this sort of activity, but of course a loan is a contribution too, and so that would be subject to the same limits. Or that a party might attempt to get a bank loan, but of course the FECA and BICRA restrictions on loans make it very difficult for a state party, particularly right after an election when they're out of money and they're broke. And you know, I don't know how fast they could get a mortgage on the state party headquarters or how they might be able to secure a loan in a way that would satisfy us. And so those policy questions become very important for me because we're trying to craft, I think all of us, a workable solution. And I think there are substantial barriers as much as I think the draft A has been informed by an effort to reach a workable solution, that there are substantial barriers. Lastly, I just want to notice the circumstance in terms of thinking about inexplicable distinctions that we would be left in between the legal expense funds that we have approved recently, post-BICRA, and this circumstance, which, as I understand it, would be that if there were some sort of challenge to, say, absentee voting procedures in the weeks leading up to an election, that a candidate might well be able to raise legal expense monies outside of the limits and address that challenge that way, i.e. the Majette opinion and others. But if a substantially identical challenge came up the day after the election, i.e., don't count the absentee ballots that were submitted under the challenge procedures, suddenly we would have a different result. And I don't see how we can explain that distinction. And so I think that the treatment that we reach for legal expense funds would suit here. And I think that that treatment is consistent with draft B and consistent with our regs.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. Additional discussion? Vice Chairman Linhart.
Thank you. I appreciate Commissioner Mason's thoughts. I mean, I think that there are policy arguments on both sides, and that has sort of informed all of our, you know, sort of approach to the statutory issue. The on the other side of the policy front, in passing BCRA, one of the things that Congress was seeking to do was to end a practice of candidates raising significant amounts of money outside of the statutory limits, and the effect of draft B would be that candidates would then be free to raise unlimited sums from in the period right before elections or right after elections, and so that's the and so that's sort of the, I think the policy argument on the other side I end up going back to the statutory analysis and trying to sort of parse through, given the language that Congress chose, what seemed to be their intent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Additional discussion? Oh, I'm sorry. Commissioner Walther. Yes.
Thank you. I, again, share the comments of Commissioner Weintraub earlier stated and the Vice Chairman. The for me, I can't get around the argument that it has to be in connection with an election. And if this isn't in connection with an election, I don't know what would be. I'm not willing to concede that election simply means influencing voters' choice. I think BCRA was intended to prevent influencing the ultimate vote of the candidate at some point by giving undue influence, encouraging corruption. And it's not just influencing the voter, but it's also to prevent corruption and the appearance of corruption. And for that reason, limits are a part of the whole process. And here in connection with an election, ENJ explanation and justification back in 1977, we acknowledge that recounts are related to an election at the very least. I tend to think that it should be confined within the definition of the election, but to try and say what was related to then but not in connection with now, to me, is a very hard one to jump. So when I look at that and then look at the intent and the philosophy of BCRA, and simply to take the lid off right after the election and allow unlimited contributions at that point doesn't seem to be consistent with the philosophy. I don't think it's absolutely clear. I think the commission also asked for clarification from Congress back in 2004 for that reason. It was not clear. And unfortunately, we're being asked to make a decision today on how we want to interpret both the regulations and the law. I think there's been an effort under draft A to meet the concerns to the best degree possible by allowing a separate fund ultimately to be created from the same donors that contributed going into the election. And looking at the Washington election, if there were $700,000 that had to be raised, a candidate for Senate, assuming they wanted to have a statewide election, to raise that $700,000 would really only have to get contributions from 350 people. If they're that close to winning, that should not be a difficult task in today's climate. And so yes, it's not the same as going out and reaching out to one contributor and getting all the money at one time, but it does provide, I think, a very quick basis. Most proven donors are on the Internet by that time of the campaign and the candidate, and they can quickly say, oh, we need some money, we're close to it, and we need to raise the money to get it. So it's a lot more practically oriented, this result, than I think draft A would have been under the two drafts that were circulated in the times before it came before the commission. I think it's the one that the Commissioner Weintraub was proposing, I guess, in the past and thought she had the votes for, and it didn't occur then. So in theory, our commission would have landed in that direction perhaps at that time. The argument that the recount is nowhere mentioned in election, I think that's true. To me, it's somewhat implicit, but even if it weren't, that's not necessary because we only have to really look at what's in connection with an election. So I think, to me, it's not persuasive to say that, well, we didn't define a recount as being part of an election. Again, I would argue that it's more implicit in the definition itself. It could result, for example, in the recount in a declaration of the invalidity of many votes, maybe the election itself. And so the ultimate process has everything to do with the outcome of who is the ultimate legal candidate, legal office holder. So for those reasons, I think draft day really meets the best balance of the uncertainty that exists in the law at this point, and I support it.
Thank you, Commissioner. A couple of follow-up points. First, an independent concern I have with draft A is this creation of a separate contribution allowance, which I see no basis for in the statute or the regulations. If the premise of draft A is that recounts are in connection with an election, which is a premise I don't share, then the only way to create a separate pot of contributions for donors would be to say that the recount itself is a separate election. And I see no basis under the statute for doing that whatsoever, nor under our regulations. And so the only plausible conclusion I could draw from that is that candidates who are facing recounts would have to go to their donors who have contributed to the general election. And if recounts truly are in connection with an election, they'd be faced with those contribution limits. And so maxed out donors would be barred from giving to the candidates for the recount efforts. It's true they could go to donors who had not maxed out, but I would suggest that that could be very difficult, particularly on the time crunch that these candidates face. But all that is to say that I see no basis under the statute, I have to say, for creating a separate contribution allowance for recount activities, especially in light of the plain meaning of election that is set out in the statute, as Commissioner Von Spakovsky pointed out. But to follow up on the point about the scope of in connection with, I do think it's very important that the federal courts have been consistent in interpreting what in connection with an election means to concern influencing voting behavior. I'm not aware of a single federal court that has ever construed the in connection with language to relate in any way to a post-election legal proceeding. And I would be very hesitant to interpret the range of the statute in that way. I also return to the Majette advisory opinion because I think it's an important one, where we allowed a member of Congress to solicit even corporate contributions for a legal defense fund for litigation that directly concerned the election in the state of Georgia. I thought that was the correct conclusion. Mainly on the theory that, again, 441IE was not designed to reach legal proceedings of this nature. And I think the same analysis applies squarely to the issues before us here today. My biggest concern with draft A, apart from my strong objection to concluding that Congress sought to federalize recounts, is the fact that I see no basis for an independent contribution limit under the statute or the regulations. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also would like to respond to a couple of the comments that have been made because I think draft A has been mischaracterized. Draft A does not say that a recount is an election. It says that a recount is in connection with an election, and that's a very different thing, and that's draws on the statutory language from Section 441IE. It's kind of a technical in-the-weeds argument, but the draft rests on the distinction between for the purpose of influencing an election, which has generally been construed as the trigger for the contribution, the definition of a contribution or an expenditure, historically has been limited by the express advocacy doctrine, which Congress in BCRA was clearly trying to get away from and to broaden. And in the recount regulation, what that says is that it's not a contribution, a gift, subscription, loan, advance, or deposit of money, or anything of value made with respect to a recount is not a contribution, except that certain prohibitions apply, which, again, would have no basis for being there if it wasn't in connection with an election. Contribution is a phrase that is usually paired with for the purpose of influencing an election. What Draft A does is says it's not for the purpose of influencing election. That's why you get a separate contribution limit, because the election's already over. But it is in connection with an election, and therefore it is bound by Section 441I's restrictions on what federal officeholders and candidates can raise and spend. And I think it was a very conscious decision on Congress's part to use that broader language, as the Vice Chairman has pointed out, in connection with an election, because they were trying to get away from. They wanted to say that this governs, this restriction on what candidates and officeholders can raise and spend governs more than what has been traditionally defined as a contribution. It governs more than express advocacy. It governs everything that's in connection with an election. And that's what the draft rests on. So it actually, since the recount regulation talks about contributions, which, as I said, is usually for the purpose of influencing an election, it's not it doesn't actually repeal the regulation. It doesn't say recounts are an election. It doesn't. It says they're in connection with an election. That's different words. It doesn't say that the regulation is repealed. And the fact that the commission put out a notice of proposed rulemaking in 2002 and didn't mention the recount issue, and commenters said, you should have. And then the commission said, well, it wasn't in the notice, so now we can't address that under the APA. That's what the commission did. It didn't say, as a substantive matter, we reject this comment. It went off on procedural grounds. The fact that they – and I think that was the correct procedural decision. And even if it had never come up in 2002, I think what the commission did in 2002 history has shown us, does not insulate us from attack when we act inconsistently with the law, because the law trumps the regulation. I agree that you can't repeal a regulation through an AO. I don't think that's what Draft A does. But I also think that it's perfectly appropriate in an AO to look at the law and apply it to a particular question that's in front of us, and try to figure out how to parse the law and the regulations in a way to come up with a result that is consistent with the law, which, as I said, in any event, would trump the regulation. So I guess that's all I have to say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. A couple points from my vantage point. I think the commission went much further in 2002 than merely saying that we wouldn't be able to address whether to change our recount regulations. Nowhere in the ENJ do we say that that was the reason that we didn't change them. To the contrary, we said squarely and quoted the commenters who urged us to change the regulations, and we reenacted the regulations and said in the ENJ that they would govern in this area. And nowhere in the ENJs that I'm familiar with do we say that we were barred from taking action because it wasn't included in the notice of proposed rulemaking. And I'd be surprised if we took that conclusion, because under the APA, we're able to look at issues that are a natural outgrowth of the notice of proposed rulemaking, and we were dealing with a whole host of soft money issues in 2002. So I must say I take strong issue with that characterization of what we did in 2002, or more importantly, what we did not do, which was we did not choose to amend the regulations in this area. But I want to follow up on the related point, which is the statute sets a contribution limit of $2,100 per election. Therefore, if we're going to create a separate contribution allotment here, the only conceivable basis for doing so is to find that this proceeding is a separate election, because that's the statutory test for determining the contribution limits. And that, for me, is what is made has no legal basis. Because clearly these are not elections as the statute contemplated. And that's the only basis for saying that you can only give another $2,100 or whatever the relevant contribution limit is. Now, I understand that there are policy reasons why we'd want to provide people to get more flexibility to go back to their donors to seek those types of funds, but I see no legal basis for it. To the contrary, my view is that if you conclude that recounts are in connection with an election, the only donors that a candidate could go to would be those who had not already contributed the maximum amount. And that's fine. If that's what my colleagues believe the law requires, I don't share it, and I don't think it's a good policy outcome. But I have an independent problem with Draft A because I think it's creating a new framework that has no basis in the statute or the regulations as I see them. To say that, well, they're not contributions, but they are in connection with an election, but you do get a separate contribution limit that's pegged off an election. To me, I can't square those various moves. For me, the most straightforward approach to handling this is to do as we've done for the last 30 years and what we did in 2002, which is to conclude that these activities were not intended to be federalized by Congress and were not intended to be treated as subject to the McCain-Feingold restrictions. Mr. Vice Chairman, were you seeking recognition?
I was, thank you. And I think that you raise good points. I mean, to my eye, both of these drafts have flaws to them. Looking at draft B, I mean, I think that if these expenditures are not in connection with the federal election, it's far from clear to me why the prohibition on foreign nationals would apply. Because the statute there, limits our restrictions to donations as well as contributions that are in connection with a federal election. So I think that there are flaws to both of these approaches. And so I, in trying to reach a resolution of this, I went back to the statute and as it was drafted in Bickner and tried to discern, given the language that Congress chose, how that fit most comfortably with the way we'd approached the interpretation of those terms, and simply ended up in a different place. But I appreciate your points on that.
Commissioner Vosikovsky.
Mr. Chairman, in fact, the E&J you were responding to, that we, explanation and justification for the crowd, everyone knows what that is, but August 5th, 2002, we specifically said, this commission, that recounts, quote, are not federal elections as defined by the Act. And so now we're supposed to adopt an advisory opinion that basically goes against an E&J we adopted in a rulemaking procedure? I mean, we can't do that. That is not allowed under the statute that governs our actions. And I'm sorry, Commissioner Weintraub, with all due respect, but I just can't let go by what you said, that you're not repealing the regulation. This regulation is clear as can be. It says that a gift, subscription, loan for a recount is not a contribution under the law, and that's what Draft A says, is that it is going to be considered a contribution. In fact, you're applying the limits. And I'd like to see, as the commissioner said, where in here can you apply a separate contribution limit to the recount? There's nothing in here that says you can do that. But I want to end it with a question. We've got advisory opinions out and a longstanding policy of not applying these contribution limits to the kind of litigation funds that are set up for litigation post-election. So my question to you is, if we adopt Draft A today, are we overruling those past advisory opinions on litigation trust funds and expenses, or are they still in place? And if someone is engaged in litigation after this election over, for example, whether absentee ballots should or should not be counted as part of a recount because there's some question over the validity of the absentee ballots, are the funds for that going to be considered to be within the contribution limits as in Draft A, or are they not going to be within the contribution limits with regard to our past AOs on litigation trust funds? Which of the two rules are we going to apply? And I think I need an answer to that before we consider whether we adopt Draft A.
Thank you, Commissioner Vosikovsky. Additional discussion. Commissioner Weintraub.
With all due respect, I don't think you need an answer to that because there's no way you're voting for draft day, whatever the answer is.
But the regulated community needs to know the effect of the adoption of draft A on these other advisory opinions that have said litigation trust funds, the contribution expenditure limitations don't apply.
You said a lot of things today that I don't agree with, but I've never interrupted you while you were speaking, Commissioner Fonts-Pakovsky. I'd appreciate the same courtesy. The draft, I believe, I'm looking for the place in it, I believe supersedes certain recount, previous opinions that were on recounts and only those. And it is my longstanding policy to only consider the specific facts that are in front of us and the specific question that's in front of us and not to deal with other questions, save those for another day. But as I've said, I think people have made their positions pretty clear. I don't think anybody's persuading anybody else, and I think that I would be prepared to make a motion at this point with absolutely no expectation of getting four votes for it, but I'll make it anyway. I'd like to move that we adopt draft A.
Commissioner Weintraub has moved to adopt draft A in advisory opinion 2006-24. And that'd be unamended, just as is in the agenda document.
As is.
Okay. Discussion on Commissioner Weintraub's motion to adopt draft A. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
Motion fails by a vote of 3-3. The Vice Chairman, Commissioner Weintraub, Commissioner Walther voting affirmatively, Commissioners Toner, Mason, and Vonsikowski voting no. Additional motions that people wish to introduce. Commissioner Vonsikowski.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt draft B.
Very pithy motion. Commissioner Vonsikowski moves the commission adopt draft B in advisory opinion 2006-24, and that would be unamended, as in the blue document.
Correct.
Commissioner, so moved. Discussion on Commissioner Vonsikowski's motion to adopt. I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion fails by a vote of 3-3. Commissioners Toner, Mason, Vonsikowski voting affirmatively. The Vice Chairman, Commissioner Weintraub, Commissioner Walther voting no. Additional motions? Commissioner Vonsikowski.
Just to point of order, Mr. Chairman, I believe with the failure of the commission to adopt an advisory opinion, it means that Regulation 100.91 and Regulation 100.151, which say that contribution and expenditures with recounts are not considered under FECA, remains in effect. Isn't that correct?
Two things. I think if there are no additional motions, I think council has a letter that they tend to send to requesters under this circumstance, am I right, indicating that the agency was not able to reach consensus. And then Commissioner Vonsikowski, I think, raises a broader question about the regulations that are on the books. Mr. General Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, as with any vote or on an advisory opinion, the ramifications. The ramifications of this one is that the status quo remains, and so the regulation wasn't before the commission. As Commissioner Vonsikowski has pointed out, this wouldn't be an appropriate forum for repealing the regulation, and so the continued vitality of the regulation, I think, remains an issue for the commission to address another day in an appropriate way.
Thank you. Commissioner Weintraub, additional motions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm nothing if not a pragmatist, and I do think it would be a good thing for the regulated community if we could provide some solid guidance on this by a vote of the majority of the commission. So anticipating that we might come to this juncture, I have an amendment to draft A that I'm going to suggest, and we'll see if this is enough to move anybody to vote for it. And what I would suggest is I have my staff distribute it. I'll describe it. And then if you want to, you know, people might want to take a five-minute break to look at the language and see what they think about it. But the effect of the amendment, and I'll ask my staff, my very able staff, who's been extraordinarily useful in all of this, in addition to circulating it around the table, maybe you could give some to the press table, too, so I'll have a clue as to what's going on here. The import of the amendment is it we looked at the language of 441 AD, the provision that limits what parties can contribute, and that language, we noticed, is actually a little bit different again. It's not for the purpose of influencing an election. It's not in connection with an election. It says it limits expenditures in connection with the general election campaign of a candidate for federal office. And I think that one could read that language such that recounts would be considered not in connection with the general election campaign of the candidate for federal office, because the campaign is over. This is something that clearly comes afterwards, and the recount funds can't be used for campaign purposes. And as a result of that difference in the language, what I would propose is that the effect would be that the commission would find that there is no 441 AD limit, contrary to the initial position of draft A, which was that you get an additional 441 AD limit for the parties in connection with a recount. In this case, they would have no overall limit if the draft were to be adopted with the amendment. But rather, they would still be limited to raising and spending hard money, but with no overall limit on how much could be raised or spent, and in hopes that that might alleviate some of the concerns that were raised by the commenter from Washington State and alluded to by Commissioner Mason, that you know this might help people in a crunch situation to be able to raise money still consistent with all the prohibitions and limits of the Act. I offer this amendment in hopes that perhaps we might be able to get four votes for something today, which I actually think would give better guidance to the regulated community than our splitting 3-3. And there was obviously enough confusion that they felt the need to ask the question. So I'd like to try and round up at least four votes for something. So in that spirit of compromise and pragmatism, Mr. Chairman, I would offer, and as I said, I think perhaps a short recess might be in order so people can study the language, but I would, at an appropriate time, move to amend draft A in accordance with the piece of paper that has just been distributed to everyone and then adopt it as amended.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Everybody has a copy of the text, and Madam Secretary, you have a copy of the – yeah, okay, great. Would my colleagues like to have some time to contemplate this? Is that their pleasure? No problem if that's the case?
Except it's – I know what I'm going to do, so it's up to you, Mr. Chairman.
Leadership.
Let's take a five-minute break. We'll reconvene in 5 minutes. Thank you. We're resuming. This is a Federal Election Commission open meeting for October 4th. Is that what day it is? October 3rd. Thank you. 2006. And
fourth.
Excuse me?
I think the agenda document says it's the 4th.
October 4th. Okay, great. October 4th. October 4th, 2006. Always good to know what day it is. All right, I've been handed a document from the Environmental Protection Agency. Okay. What day is it over there? And then the Federal Election Commission. I'm sorry, has Council distributed a document, I guess? Do we know the import of this? Yes, Ms. Paul.
Yes, we had a request during the break just to circulate. This is the coordinated expenditure limits as calculated state by state for Senate candidates in the 2006 elections.
Okay.
So this is just the Federal Register notice, and the second page of the handout has the state by state listing of what those limits are.
Okay, so that gives us a sense of what those coordinated expenditure limits would be. All right, now we had Commissioner Weintraub distributed her language and talk briefly about it. Any additional thoughts in terms of your approach? Commissioner, please.
No, thank you, really, Mr. Chairman. I made my pitch. I crossed my fingers and hope there'll be four votes.
Okay. Would you like to so move to make the amendments?
Yes. I wasn't clear on whether I'd actually already moved that or not, but if I haven't, I do.
Okay. Let me try to phrase the motion. Commissioner Weintraub is moving to adopt draft A in advisory opinion 2006-24, but as amended here at the table, two-page document dealing with amendments to pages 13 and 14 of the draft. And that's been distributed and has been provided to the commission secretary. Okay, discussion on Commissioner Weintraub's motion. Commissioner Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm prepared reluctantly to vote for this, and it's really for a practical reason. And I may be wrong, and I even invited people to make comments about this during the period when these drafts were due, and I didn't get any comments. I mean, I told, you know, and so no, obviously no permissible ex parte context that I would have had to disclose, or I would have disclosed them, and not much in the public comments, and so it's really only a guess, and I'm a little uncomfortable in that sense. But one of my senses is that the requesters wouldn't have been here if they were comfortable with the status quo, but my colleagues and my immediate right and left have argued correctly that if the commission did nothing, the old advisory opinions wouldn't be out there, and people would be entitled to rely on those. And I think it would certainly be the result that if a candidate collected and spent money in excess, individual money in excess of the limits, and a complaint were filed, that the commission probably wouldn't take enforcement action. In fact, I would argue very vigorously that we shouldn't in that circumstance. But I take it that assurance may not be sufficient for the donors who are contemplating making these, because this is the second time we've been asked this question. And so I take it, I know that the party committees are not in the business of aimlessly or pointlessly submitting advisory opinions. They do it when they think there's a need to do it. And so I think the regulated community would benefit by some clarity here. And I have certainly been in lots of situations here on the commission where the clarity we could achieve was not the clarity that I preferred. And so on the policy level, I'll go back to the point I made, which is that if you can't raise enough money at $10,000 a donor with a separate limit, through the state party to fund your recount, you're probably getting a message you don't want to hear. And I think as a practical matter that it's hard to imagine a situation in which a candidate or a campaign would not be able to raise sufficient funds to fully and vigorously prosecute a recount under what would effectively be a $10,000 limit working through the state party. I think there probably will be some situations analogous to the situation in Washington State with the gubernatorial recount where this causes some difficulties, and I think that's unfortunate. Let me also just address some specific points about the intersection of the statute and regulations, because I would not be willing to vote for a compromise that I thought was flatly inconsistent with the law or the regs, even if I thought it was a good policy outcome. And so let's start with the regulations, and that is the regulation addresses contribution. There's nothing in this advisory opinion that changes that regulation. The money would still not be a contribution. The effect of that in prior years has been that it's essentially outside the system and not subject to the limits, and that effect is slightly different here, but the regulation is not being changed. It's not being repealed. It's simply the effect of the regulation, given the interaction with some other provisions of the statute, is going to be different now than it was before. Secondly, I think it's not inconsistent with the statute as amended. 441I clearly contemplates that federal candidates and office holders are going to be raising money that does not constitute a contribution. That's what 441I is all about, is limiting the ways in which and the purposes for which and the amounts of which money can be raised that's not contribution money. Now, we could take the position that that really only meant for state candidates' campaigns and political parties and so on, but I don't think that sort of a reading is necessary, that, well, it only, you know, they only can raise this non-contribution money for federal election activities that are mentioned, for 501c organizations that are mentioned, and, you know, so on like that. Because while there are specific provisions that have to do with all of those categories, the language, the limitation language is more general. And so the approach that says, based on a fairly narrow technical legal distinction between purpose of influencing and in connection with, that would effectively trigger a different limit, I think is an acceptable way of reading the statute. So I don't think there's a conflict with the statute. I don't think there's a conflict with the regs. I do think it is a different interpretation of our regulations than has been followed up to this point. And the explanation would simply be, upon a careful reading of the statute, we concluded that this relatively new provision of the statute affected the regulations in a different way. As I said, it's not what I would have preferred, but it strikes me that it is, as a practical matter, better than leaving the issue unresolved.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say that I agree entirely with both with Commissioner Mason's construction of what the opinion does and doesn't do, and also with his view that this will provide needed guidance to the regulated community. I mean, there's some security in people thinking, well, there aren't four votes to enforce this provision against me, but there's always the threat of an A8 suit, and, you know, if a judge were to take my view, which is that the statute is inconsistent with the other interpretation, then, you know, they still could run into trouble down the road. And I also agree that they wouldn't have asked if they thought that they could just rely on that old recount regulation in the AOs and take that to the bank and not have to worry about it. I don't think they would have asked, because I suspect they would have liked that result. And I very, very much appreciate Commissioner Mason's willingness to vote for something that is clearly not his first choice. That's really all I have to say.
Thank you. Additional discussion? I'll just briefly make a couple comments. I will not be voting for the motion. I must say I have significant concerns about this approach. I don't think it's consistent with the binding regulations that have been issued by this agency, and I don't think it's consistent with the statute. But this is probably not the last time that I will be on the short end of a situation like that. And I think that I think Commissioner Weintraub rightly notes that there's a lot of very technical distinctions that we make in the law out of necessity, and I think that this would be another aspect of that. I mean, as I guess as I understand it, the approach would be to say that recounts are in connection with an election, but they're not in connection with the general election campaign of a candidate. We'd have to evaluate that distinction. I'm not persuaded by it, I have to say. But I think Commissioner Weintraub makes a good point that there are a number of very technical distinctions that we make under our statute and that we need to make under our statute. My biggest concern is I do not think it's appropriate to change the law regarding the financing of recounts 5 weeks before a national election. I have grave concerns about doing that. Regardless of the various policy views that have been espoused here, and particularly when there are binding regulations on the books that are not subject to legal challenge that resolve these issues. But that being said, I think it's been a good discussion. We'll have to see how this plays out, but I do have significant concerns about this approach under our regulations. I just do not believe they're consistent with the laws and the statute in this area. Additional discussion. Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
I'm not going to support this motion by Commissioner Weintraub because it's inherently contradictory. For those of you in the audience who want to know what this is about, it would be to basically adopt Draft A, which is going to say that recount funds, all the limitations and prohibitions of the Act apply to them. But when it comes to the state parties' funds and coordinated activities on the recount, why it won't apply to them? And the motion says, and I quote, "Recount funds are subject to the limitations, prohibitions, and reporting requirements of the Act, and the only reason for that is because they are in connection with a federal election. But they are not in connection with the general election campaign of the federal candidate because the campaign has ended and because such funds are not otherwise permitted to be used for campaign activity." In other words, for the purposes of the recount funds in general, while they are in connection with the federal election, therefore the prohibitions apply. But when it comes to coordinated activities, they're not in connection with the general election. I mean, that is inherently contradictory and makes no sense. And, you know, I see now that we're going to be outvoted on this, and I realize this is a very serious thing to say. And I think my colleagues know that on many of our votes, I'm on the losing end, and we just go on to the next vote and don't say anything about it. But I have to say, as the chairman has indicated, that I've said here before, draft A effectively repeals two of our regulations. There's no question about that. And the law does not allow us to do that. And I would say to the regulated community that, quite frankly, that if an enforcement action is filed against you and you have been following the two regulations to the letter, I mean, you will have a good case against the FEC for filing an enforcement action against you based on an advisory opinion that repealed two regulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Von Sikorski. Additional discussion on Commissioner Weintraub's motion to adopt an advisory opinion 2006-24. And again, this would be an amendment to Draft A to pages 13 and 14 of that draft as discussed here at the table. Commissioner Walther, yes, please.
I plan to support the amendment. I think it's a reasonable approach toward the distinction between the statute that says in connection with an election and then in connection with a general election campaign. I think we're entitled statutorily to, in our statutory construction, to assume there's a different meaning that was attributed to the two different phraseologies. I think it's a fair fit. And it also, in my mind, is in more in sync with the philosophy of BCRA to keep soft money out of the process. So I'm going to support it.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. Additional discussion on the motion? Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Okay.
No. Motion carries by a vote of two, 4-2. The Vice Chairman, Commissioner Weintraub, Walther, and Commissioner Mason's voting affirmatively, Commissioners Toner and Von Spakovsky voting no. And mercifully, this matter is concluded. And I appreciate the patience of our audience. Now we're on to round two. It will continue to be lively. Our next issue this morning, I plan to go to about 12:30 if that works for everybody, and then break until 2 p.m. because I suspect we're going to need that time. Our next item this morning is Draft Advisor Opinion 2006-20. And, Mr. Vice Chairman, we have a late submitted document.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider Agenda Document 06-64.
Vice Chairman is so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present. And this is an advisory opinion that has been submitted on behalf of Unity 08. And from the counsel's office, Ms. Severa. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The draft advisory opinion before you responds to a request on behalf of Unity 08 regarding Unity 08's status as a political committee. Unity 08 is a Section 527 organization that describes itself as a nascent political party. Unity 08 states that its first goal is to nominate and elect a Unity 08 ticket for the offices of President and Vice President in 2008. The draft concludes that Unity 08 will be a political committee once it receives contributions or makes expenditures in excess of $1,000. Specifically, the draft concludes that funds Unity 08 receives will be contributions because Unity 08 will receive those funds in response to solicitations clearly indicating that the funds will be used to promote the election of its presidential and vice presidential candidates. The draft also concludes that Unity 08 will make expenditures when gaining ballot access as an organization. Finally, the draft concludes that Unity 08's own statements about nominating and electing a Unity 08 ticket show that its major purpose is the nomination and election of candidates for federal office. We received one comment on the draft from the requester, and I'll be happy to address any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Discussion of the draft before us concerning Unity 08. Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Mr. Chairman, The last advisory opinion was difficult, but this one is also very difficult because I don't think our regulations were really meant to take into account this situation. And I frankly can't support the draft legal opinion. Again, I want to compliment our legal department. They did a good job trying to come up with an answer to this, but in some ways it's like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. I mean, all of our regs really apply to and are used with the existing parties, and when a new party is being organized, our regulations really don't fit very well with what they're doing. The problem I have with this draft is I think it basically strangles a new party that's being organized in its infancy, and I don't think the statute or regulations were intended to do that. One of the main points in the draft opinion is that it takes our regulation 100.57, and it takes that regulation on contributions and uses that to say that this organization is a political committee and therefore the contribution expenditure limits apply. And the problem is that I think the interpretation goes far beyond the regulation. That regulation says that funds given in response to any communication is a contribution if the communication indicates that any portion of the funds will be used to support or oppose the election of a clearly identified federal candidate. I mean, that's the key language in there. And when you look at our definition of clearly identified candidate, which is another one of our regulations, quote, it means the candidate's name, nickname, photograph, or drawing appears, or the identity of the candidate is otherwise apparent through an unambiguous reference such as the president, your congressman, or the incumbent. Mr. Duffy, who submitted this request, is in the audience. I looked at your website. I don't believe I've seen a nickname or a photograph of who it is that you all want to draft at some point in the future for your candidates, because you don't know who those people are going to be. It's very clear to me that these regulations apply to known candidates. Now, our draft opinion relies on some earlier advisory opinions that we issued, none of which I believe apply to this situation. You know, every single example that we have in our E&J, one of the E&Js we issued on 157, all of the examples involve a clearly identified actual known candidate. There's not one in there that fits the situation we have here with Unity. One of the advisory opinions relied on We Lead, another one, Iowa 1980 U.S. Senate campaign. Those were all advisory opinions issued before we came up with this regulation. And the We Lead one involved earmarked contributions, which is an entirely different situation than what we have with this nascent political party. The Iowa AO, which is back from way in 1977, basically was about a search committee that was looking for a candidate and was then going to, and made very clear, they were going to act as the principal campaign committee for that candidate, and they already had registered as a political committee with us when they wrote it. So, I mean, none of these really apply to this situation. I also have some problem with the expenditure analysis. That's another way we're saying that they need to be registered as a political committee because, you know, the draft relies on the claim that Unity is not like other organizations that secure ballot access for themselves in order to field an entire slate of federal and state candidates. Well, the problem with and you know, we're criticizing Unity because they've said they only want to basically work on getting two candidates, one for president and vice president. Well, the problem with this claim is that the idea that you have to be interested in fielding an entire slate of candidates, for example, to be qualified as a party under our regulations is nowhere to be found in our regulation. Our regulation says if you want to be qualified as a political party, this 100.15, it means an association, committee, or organization which nominates or selects a candidate for elections to any federal office. The position we're taking today would have, I think, made it impossible for the Reform Party to get going back when they did, when they were revolving around one particular individual, Ross Perot. And I don't think the expenditure analysis is a correct one either. One of the comments sent in by Mr. Duffy points out that on the major purpose test, they cite the GOPAC decision, District of Columbia Court, which says that even if the organization's major purpose is the election of a federal candidate, the organization does not become a political committee, and that's what our draft says, they are a political committee, unless or until it makes expenditures to support a person who has decided to become a candidate for federal office. Everyone here understands they have no candidate that's decided to become a candidate for federal office. And so, once again, I just don't think any of these provisions apply. And I think draft A comes to a wrong conclusion based on the current phase that this organization is in.
Thank you, Commissioner Von Spakovsky. Discussion of the issues before us? Or are we ready for a lunch break? Undoubtedly, that the latter is the case. I'll have some additional comments, but I just want to briefly talk about a couple things. First of all, I do have concerns about concluding that 100.57 of our regulations are triggered here, mainly because I think that regulation was very carefully constructed to set up a bright line between solicitations that reference federal candidates, where very significant and very important legal obligations will attach, versus generic solicitations, other types of solicitations that do not reference federal candidates, where the agency decided to provide more latitude in terms of fundraising. And I think it's very notable that in the ENJ for 100.57 that we passed in 2004, we included some examples of the types of solicitations that would be triggered under 100.57. And all of them in the ENJ either had named candidates, you know, Congresswoman Jones or Senator Smith, or contained an unambiguous reference to a single candidate, such as the president, a reference such as that. But to my knowledge, we made no reference to hypothetical candidates or potential candidates, necessarily a broad category of people. And I think it's also very noteworthy that we did not cite or rely upon the We Lead advisory opinion in the explanation and justification for 100.57. And perhaps for the reasons that Commissioner Von Spakovsky outlined. So I think regardless of how we come out on the very important issues here with Unity 08, I have real concerns about applying 100.57 to these kinds of solicitations because, in my view, it would represent a significant expansion of the reach of that rule, and I think that's a significant issue. On the expenditure side, I think it's important to note, as Commissioner Von Spakovsky has, that the advisory opinions that concerned ballot access fees that we did determine to be expenditures involved candidates who are incurring those expenses, and here we're dealing with what could become a political party, what could become a political committee, and so we really have a dearth of past authority in this area, and for me, that's a much closer question, actually, how to come out on the expenditure side. On the contribution side, I really believe that these activities should not be seen as implementing the contribution side. But on the expenditure side, I think it's a much closer question, which is a long way of saying that I'm going to continue to hear the debate and see how it plays out. But my biggest concern in this area, two concerns. One, that whatever we do here doesn't disturb the settled understanding of 100.57, which I think is a very important part of our regulations. And two, that that we continue to be open to the questions that the types of questions that Unity 08 has brought to us. It's a novel organization. It is a young organization, and they're trying to navigate their way through the campaign finance laws. And I think all of us are being very sensitive to trying to be fully open to that effort and reading the authorities in a way that does not unnecessarily hamstring their efforts to get up and running, because they're really essentially trying, I think, to compete with the two national parties in the 2008 presidential election. So with that being said, additional discussion or preliminary discussion on these issues. Commissioner Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not entirely comfortable with the document or, frankly, with the request for a couple of different reasons. And let me start with one of the issues that both my colleagues who've spoken so far have raised, and that is the contribution analysis. And I think there are two elements to it, and the opinion relies very heavily on one element. And the second element is one we sort of only get to by extension. Where I think the opinion is correct based on our prior advisory opinions is clearly identified candidate. Because what we've said before is when you have a party and an office and an election cycle, that constitutes a clearly identified candidate. And I think we have that here. What I think is being disputed by the requester is whether the funds are to support the clearly identified candidate. And I think that is a much closer question analytically. And then what bothers me about the application of the contribution regulation in particular, and here I'm sort of like the chairman, the expenditure part is not as much of a problem, is that the clarity that I thought we were trying to achieve in 100.57 just isn't there. In other words, they're doing organization building and they're asking people for money for organization building, and yes, they have this purpose and it's pretty clear. It's all pointed to the presidential election, but it starts to get sort of a step away from the clarity that I thought. And operationally, it's distinct from the Iowa 1980 opinion, which I think is actually a useful precedent, and from We Lead, where they wanted to actually spend the money or give the money to the candidate or spend the money on direct candidate-type expenditures, and that's clearly not being asked here. So that's a difference that's certainly important, whether it's one that's relevant or pushes us in a different direction or not, I don't know. But I think the discussion really very little gets to the question of support, and it's only through this kind of two-step analysis. Well, we've got this clearly identified candidate, and over here in some commission advisory opinions, we've said ballot access, as an expenditure, and since we've got a clearly identified candidate, and constructively speaking, we've got an expenditure, we've got a solicitation. That, for me, is not what 150.57 was about. And that's why I have some real doubts about that application. One of the initial questions I had before was about this nation political party analysis. And having raised that myself, I've come to the conclusion that the request here essentially stipulates out that possibility. And that makes it very hard for me to deal with. And that is to say, one of the anomalies of the statutory provisions of the regulations here is there's a statutory provision of political party that says, well, if you nominate a candidate, you're a political party. Well, that doesn't really get you much. Political party status doesn't automatically, for instance, make you a political committee under the Act. Political party status does not entitle you to any different, if you are a political committee, to any different contribution limit than you otherwise would be eligible for. To do that, you have to be a state committee or a national committee. And in both of those definitions, we have this little phrase, as determined by the commission. And I assume we have to read that as giving the commission, in essence, permission and license to impose additional requirements, almost as if it said subject to regulations promulgated by the commission. I don't know how else to read that and how else to read that determination. And so what the commission has said in the past is that you can't be a state party committee or a national party committee if you're only supporting one candidate. And that goes back to the John Anderson situation. And I think that makes sense in the context of reading the whole statute. In other words, we're not just looking at the political party definition by itself. We're looking at the contribution limits and all the other pieces of the statute and trying to fit it together. And I think it made sense in 1980 to say to John Anderson, no, you can't have your own captive committee to go out and raise money for your own captive political party to do a 441 AD expenditure if that's all you're ever going to do. Reform Party ended up being a different situation because they did put a permanent structure. And so one of the upshots of that for me is that this request presents a situation that the requester really had to work hard to get to. And that is to say, and it was repeated in the August 18 submission, that they have no intention of ever supporting any other candidate for any other office. And so that, to me, is relevant in informing this, and it's also relevant in whatever we do in distinguishing it from any other situation, because otherwise, simply the effort by a party, a group, to get a party line on a state ballot, absent the declaration that the only thing we're ever going to do with this is run somebody for president, would be a very different question. I agree with Commissioner Von Spakovsky that the act was not set up with these initial efforts in mind, and I think that's a problem, and I think we need to do our best to work through the various provisions and give people practical ways to work with them. And I referred, of course, to some parts of the Buckley decision that suggested that unreasonable burdens on new parties would be unconstitutional. I'm not sure it reaches that level here. And that is that even if, for instance, we were to look at it and say, well, maybe they could get a state party limit, we're looking at the difference between a $5,000 limit and a $10,000 limit. And I take it in the submission that the group is now saying they only want $5,000, so I don't know how they'd base a claim. I do want to address the question of a corruption rationale, because that's important. And I think, well, I don't like to speculate about this sort of thing. It's not too hard to imagine a situation very close to the facts we've got here that could raise a corruption concern. And that would be to say, what if we had Bob Perry on the Republican side, who's been in the newspaper lately, or George Soros on the Democratic side, decide that they wanted, for whatever reasons, to get a new party off the ground, to run somebody for president, and they were going to give $100 million or whatever it cost to do that. And and with that kind of money, you could go out and you could probably get on the ballot on all 30 states that allowed you to do that. And that sort of money might well raise a corruption possibility. Now, and you wouldn't even have to plan on winning to do that. I mean, let's say that this was done with the idea of changing a few hundred votes in Palm Beach County for the candidate who ultimately ran. In other words, the fact that such an effort would be unlikely in our wildest imaginings to fund a candidate who would be to win the election isn't to say that they wouldn't influence it and that a concern wouldn't be raised. Now, this group, I don't think there's anything untoward going on, and obviously they don't want $100 million from George Soros or Bob Perry or anybody else. However, the corruption possibility is there, and then so we're thrown back to working with the limits in the statute. And even less than the court, we don't have a scalpel to say, well, we think a $20,000 limit would suit better here than a $5,000 limit. I actually think a $20,000 limit would work better, but that's not the way the statute works. And so those are some of the problems I've been working through, I am inclined to conclude that this organization is a political committee, but it is really because of their very narrow and very specific statements of intention, and not because of some more general conclusions about how this might apply to another group that was trying to build a party that had broader purposes.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. Additional discussion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this raises some very difficult issues, and not entirely clear results under the law. I appreciate what the staff has done with this. I think they made a very good effort here, and I came in today prepared to support the staff draft. But I guess my question, because I think Commissioner Mason in particular has raised some very good points, is: are you suggesting amendments to the draft that would make you feel more comfortable, or because you seem to like the result, or if not like it, be willing to support it at some level. And I'm just trying to figure out where we're going with this.
That's a question always in order. Where are we going?
Mr. Mason?
I think one possibility would certainly be to delete the contribution side of the analysis as unnecessary to the result here, and simply rely on the expenditure side. That would be a way to make a cut, you know, that would be, I think, fairly easy to make. And get us to a result.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub.
I'd be prepared to support such a result.
Vice Chairman Linhart.
No, I'm sorry. Are you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would as well.
Okay.
Motion time.
Motion time. Okay. Does anyone wish to offer a motion in this regard? Commissioner Mason?
Let me inquire the staff. If we issued that instruction, I think the opinion structurally is easy enough. In other words, would is that something you would need to execute, or do you need some further guidance?
I think the draft structure would stand without the contribution section.
Commissioner Mason, do you wish to so move?
I'd move approval of the draft advisory opinion, except that we would remove the contribution section of the analysis.
Commissioner Mason has moved approval of agenda document number 0664 in advisory opinion 2006-20 concerning Unity 08, except that the contribution analysis shall be deleted. And as I understand it, the agency would be relying solely on an expenditure analysis and a major purpose analysis to conclude that the entity is a political committee. Is that? Commissioner Mason is so moved. Discussion on Commissioner Mason's motion. Commissioner Wall.
I'd support that motion. I wanted to compliment counsel for the hard work and the very very persistent and persuasive arguments. It was tough for me to come to not so much the result, but there are, it made it quite clear that we probably could do a service if we regulated with more precision in this area, so that we wouldn't run the risk of really deterring efforts to get off the ground, because I think that's so important for us to make sure that it doesn't happen. But I think in the concept, the overall driving force here is to get on the ballot and make a difference in the 2008 election. And the various phases that are referred to are basically stepping stones to get in that direction, not independent conscious raising efforts independent of that. So for me, I was persuaded regarding the overall intent, but I think the opinion does a good job, and I support it.
Thank you.
As amended.
As amended. And Commissioner Mason, I take it that you, in the expenditure side, I'm just turning to the expenditure analysis now on the draft, pages 7-8, there is a footnote that emphasizes, I think, Commissioner Mason, one of the points you were saying is that here, there's been a representation made by Unity 08 that intends to solely support presidential candidates, and so therefore no potential support for state or local candidates. And is that a key element, in your view, to finding the expenditure prong satisfied here?
It is, and in fact, I would go further and say that I intend to issue a statement on my own, emphasizing that if an organization came to us with an intention to support more than one candidate and a plan to obtain ballot access for the purpose of supporting more than one candidate, and whether federal or non-federal or some mix, that would present a different question.
Thank you. Discussion on Commissioner Mason's motion to adopt agenda document 0664 with the amendments as discussed here at the table. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present, and the opinion is adopted. Terrific. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
I'm sorry. I thought that the vote was on a motion to amend the draft, not to adopt the entire.
As amended, yes, as amended here at the table. The commissioner's motion was to adopt the draft except to delete the contribution analysis.
Okay, then I misunderstood, okay. And I would like to change my vote to nay.
Okay. Well, Madam Secretary, why don't we have the proceedings indicate that Commissioner Mason's motion was adopted on a 5-1 vote with Commissioner Ivan-Sikorsky dissenting on that score. Thank you, Commissioner. I apologize. Okay, why don't we turn to the last item of our agenda and see if we can complete that by the lunch break. That concerns the Mangiardo audit. And I believe we have a late submitted document. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider agenda document 06-62A.
Vice Chairman, so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present. Any opening thoughts? Does the counsel's office want to begin? Does our audit team want to begin? How do we want to proceed here? Or does the vice chairman want to begin? And the vice chairman has introduced a document. Mr. Vice Chairman, why don't we begin with you?
Okay, thank you. And I'd like to begin by, informing those people from the public who are here that we've now entered the least interesting phase of the day. And if you want to get an early jump on lunch, feel free, because what we're dealing with here is a process matter. We have before us a report of the Audit Division on a Senate campaign, and there is a paragraph in this report on page 7, which I think is simply inartfully phrased, but given the processes and practices of the agency, it meant that the correcting of that, or what I believe will be a simple correcting of that, requires action in this forum, and so we will do that. What this all relates to is the legal duties of political committees to comply with the FEC's requirements that they report contributions or loans from the candidate of $1,000 or more that are received less than 20 days or more than 48 hours before the election. The parlance we used is the 48-hour reports. And this committee, the audit staff, has concluded that this committee received contributions which should have been reported and were not. And those contributions came from two sources. The first source was an independent group, which in this case was called MoveOn.org, a famous independent group, but one whose activities are like many others, that solicited contributions for this candidate on their website and then forwarded those contributions to the campaign. As I understand it, both the information as to who those donors were and the sums themselves were transferred to the Senate campaign within the 48-hour time period, and the auditor's conclusions were, as a consequence, those had to be reported. And I want to make sure that as I go through that both the audit staff and our lawyers correct me if I'm wrong as to my understanding of the facts, because one of the reasons it's on our agenda now and didn't get handled earlier is it took me a long time to really feel comfortable that I really understood what the nature of these two different transactions were, and they're all lumped together as a scene of a like kind in paragraph 7, which is really the source of my concerns. The second set of transactions involved the campaign's website itself, and the Senate campaign, as they all do, had a website which allowed individuals to make contributions to the Senate campaign directly on the website. And the web and the Senate campaign hired a vendor to operate that part of its site, and this vendor collected the information from people who wanted to donate, forwarded that the information as to the credit cards and the identity of the donor and the sums onto the credit card companies, who then processed it through, forwarded those sums back to the vendor, and then the vendor ultimately transferred those funds and the identity of the donors and the sums they contributed and the dates to the campaign. And as I understand it, these 48-hour reports involve funds that were contributed on the website. The payments had been processed through, and the money had been received by the campaign, again within the 48-hour reporting window. The problem, as I understand it, is that the campaign had arranged with its website vendor to receive periodic reports on who had made contributions and how much they'd contributed, and that those reports were tied to the FEC reporting period, so the campaign could get the information from the vendor and process the reports, but that they did not arrange to have reports delivered, contemporaneously or at least on a daily basis within the 48-hour time period, and as a consequence didn't file some 48-hour reports, and that is the source of the second set of problems. And that the conclusion of the audit staff is that the because on the website side, the vendor is working for the campaign had an obligation and had the capacity to reach out and draw down data in a way that would have allowed them to timely file their 48-hour reports, and that all made sense to me. The problem is that the phraseology, as I read it on page 7, mixes both the contributions from Move On and the contributions from the vendor together and describes the campaign as having a duty in the 48-hour time period to reach out to these outside groups and collect information from them as to who had contributed to the campaign. And while I think that analysis makes sense in looking at the vendor for the campaign's own website, I did not see our regulations as creating a similar duty or obligation to reach out to outside groups that are funded raising for you, but that have not yet transferred the sums, the contributions and the donor identity to the campaign. And so, having said all of that, I drafted up and have circulated to both OGC and the auditor some language which I think more fairly splits out these two kinds of transactions, identifies the natures of the problems that occurred, and makes clear that to the degree that these funds were received and the information was received by the vendor working for the campaign running the campaign's own website, the campaign did have a duty to obtain that information from that vendor. I wanted to try and make sure first that the audit staff and the legal department thinks that I've got it right, that I understand, at least at this late date, what the nature of those transactions were, what we're saying the legal duties were, and then more broadly whether that comports with the sense of the commission here.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Audit team's thoughts, council's thoughts, please.
Yes. As far as the audit division is concerned, we feel that you've gotten the facts correct on your paragraph, and it seems fine with us. It seems like an appropriate substitute for that paragraph.
Thank you. Council's thoughts?
We just had one comment, and that is with respect to the credit card contributions from the credit card vendor, and that is, if the theory is that they had access to the information and the contributions were received by the committee from the credit card contributor within the 48 hours, then I'm not sure we have to address the issue of agency. We can, but we're not actually required, because the facts are such that they had the contribution within the 48 hours and they had the information within the 48 hours. And so there's no necessity to say that the credit card contributor is actually the agency of the committee. That's the only comment. You can, but it's not necessary. We don't think it's necessary.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
And I guess the question I had is, my understanding was that as to the credit card vendor, the vendor had was unclear to me whether the committee itself had the information as to the donors or simply had access to it.
Right.
The committee could access the database at any time, real time. So as the contributor made a contribution, they could see it right away.
But if I can just clarify, they hadn't received a report from the vendor. They didn't actually they had the capacity to go out and pull down the data, but it hadn't been formally provided to them.
The understanding is the arrangement that they had with the vendor was that the vendor supplied a monthly reports to the committee, which were used to for the committee to prepare the fact reports. But for this particular case, yeah, they could have gone online any time and see the information from the database.
Discussion of these issues. And Mr. Vice Chairman, you wish to
assuming no one else wants to speak on this gripping question, I would like to move for the adoption of the report of the Audit Division on the Daniel Mongiardo for Senate campaign, which appears as Agenda Document 06-62, as amended on page 7 by the text that appears in Agenda Document 06-62A.
Vice Chairman has moved to approve Agenda Document Number 06-62 as amended by Agenda Document 06-62A in the report concerning Daniel Mongiardo for the United States Senate. Discussion on the Vice Chairman's motion to adopt. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of 5-0 with Commissioner Walther absent. And this matter is concluded. Thank you very much. Our last item of business this afternoon, management and administrative matters, Madam Staff Director.
Just one quick note, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. The next due date for the filing of quarterly reports is October 15th. And to assist filers with questions, agency staff will be available by phone on the observed Columbus Day holiday, which this year falls on Monday, October 9th, and the staffers will be available from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern. Toll-free number is 1-800-424-9530, and the local number is 202-694-1100.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. That concludes our business for today, and this meeting is adjourned.